Monday, happy day. You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Today's special guest is author Marion Sturkey. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. In a continuation of our Veterans Day special this week, we have a favorite guest here who was on back during the wall, when the wall was here, Marion Sturkey. He's written several books. One of his probably most famous is Bonnie Sue, a Marine Corps helicopter squadron in Vietnam. We talked a lot about that when he was here the last time. And today, we're going to be talking about Veterans Day, what it means. Did you know that this is the 236th birthday of the Marines? And I think it's very interesting, Marion. You were telling me why their birthday is on the 10th of November. And why is that?
Well, Ed, I will answer that. But first, thank you for having me back here. And the Marines' birthday is on the 10th of November. Because back in 1775, the Continental Congress, mm-hmm. before we had a United States Congress, the Continental Congress established the Continental Marines. So that's our birthday, and we celebrate it. But we'd like to say that our birthday is on the 10th, and in case someone celebrates a little bit too much, the United States Congress has given us a holiday the next day to recuperate.
No, but actually, Veterans Day.
Actually,
yes.
It's Veterans Day, but we like to say that Congress has given us a special day.
Well, you know, I guess that makes the Marines extra special, doesn't it?
Well, they are to me, but yeah. I'm proud of. Incidentally, I've got a son-in-law in the Air Force. He's a good man, and he's a great asset to the Air Force. He's been in Iraq, he's been in Afghanistan, and he is over in the Middle East right now. So. On Veterans Day, I'm going to be thinking about him as well as some other family members who are serving or have served in the military.
Absolutely. And, Marion, you know, one of the things I want to say to you today is thank you for your service and all that you've done for this country. Because you know what? Without our veterans, without our active military people, we might not be able to be here talking on the radio today.
Well, we would not be able to be talking here, Ann, but I haven't done much of anything. I've just tried to do what I was paid to do and what I thought was right and what the country asked me to do. But military service is something that's invisible to a lot of people, and I understand that. We were talking before we went on the air about driving by a store mm-hmm. every day, and it becomes invisible. You don't see it. Well, the military is like that to a lot of people. If they are not personally associated with the military and they don't have anybody in their family who's in the military, it's something that almost doesn't exist. It's foreign to them, and I understand that.
Absolutely. And you know, we don't understand what our troops go through when they are in combat. Yesterday we had Garrett Coberson, who had been in Iraq with the Bravo Company from right here in Hodges. And he was telling us about the heat and 130 degrees and, you know, stuff like that that just, you just can't even imagine. And wearing a pack that, let's see, what did he tell us? He weighs 150 pounds, but with the pack he weighed 230 with all his gear and everything. The fact that you had to have gloves on to be able to handle your weapon because it was too hot to touch once you'd been outside. Things like that that you just don't even think about.
Well, you're right, and my time in the military, I had it relatively easy. I was primarily a helicopter pilot.
During
the Vietnam era, and although I spent a lot of time with the infantry, usually I had a fairly safe place to lay my head at night. I never slept in the rain. I slept in the helicopter a lot, mm-hmm. but I never went 3 or 4 weeks without taking a bath.
Or sleeping in the foxhole they talk about, right?
Well, we like to call them fighting holes, but,
you're
right.
Fighting holes, okay.
But if you're in a, since you were talking about Iraq, if you're in a an environment that's tropical or at least hot and humid, imagine going and being in the sand or being in the dirt for several weeks without taking a bath in 100-degree heat. And if you're in the infantry, that's part of the game.
That's right, and those are things that we can't even imagine. One of the things Garrett was talking about was the grit that you couldn't eat anything without sand. Grit was part of it, and part of the joy of coming home was having food that didn't have grit in it.
I would agree with that. during my time, there were some areas of Vietnam where you did not have that, but if you got into coastal areas, it was a fine sand. It wasn't really sand. It was finer than that. And it was in everything. It was in your stomach, in your all over you. It was in what you ate. It was on everything you touched. So he's right.
And, you know, another thing we don't think about are the what comes in those packs of, what are they called? We were talking about
MREs?
Yes. And a little toilet tissue. Now, who would have thought you don't take a roll of toilet paper in with you into the bush there, do you?
Well, if you do, you would run through it in a day or two.
And everybody would want it.
But they would. But the thing is, you talked about him having to carry all this stuff on his back. There are 101 things you need to carry, but I don't care if it's even toilet tissue. It takes up space and it takes up weight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to be carrying it around for 3 or 4 weeks, you're very conscious of what things weigh.
Yeah.
So you're not going to waste a couple of pounds carrying around a bunch of toilet paper, even if you had the space. So in the old sea rations, which I'm more familiar with, they had a lot of goodies in it. I was talking to your husband about the hardtack, we called it a cookie or a cake.
Right.
You always had one of those, but you always had a little small thing of toilet tissue. But it was meant to last you just for several hours.
Wow. Unbelievable. You were talking about some of the things you ate. What was it, beans and ham or something? Or what were you talking about, some of these things?
I'm not going to give you the name that Jeff and I used, but it was the civil name was ham and lima beans. We had a more...
That sounds like a great thing to have out there in the jungle.
It usually was not your favorite. I liked turkey loaf. That was my favorite.
Turkey loaf?
Right.
And didn't you say you had some type of meatloaf or something?
We had a meatloaf. We had turkey loaf.
Or was it mystery meat?
I don't really know what it was. It was supposed to be meatloaf.
Right.
But some of the packs came with a little can of fruit cocktail, and that was the one everybody wanted because if you didn't eat it, it was great trading material. Everybody wanted fruit cocktail.
You know, these are the things that I think as everyday people right here, you know, at home, we don't think about these things. We may think about, God, we wish we had more money to go out and buy a big steak or something like that, but we don't think about the fact that you had to be satisfied with beans, lima beans, and ham.
Well, Ann, I never went hungry. Now, there were some times when I didn't get a meal for 12 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really hungry. It wasn't always what I wanted to eat, but it was somewhat on the primitive side.
Primitive side. Okay, that's a good way to describe it. Well, other things about when you were in Vietnam, as you think about where we are today. You know, our guys have been over there in Iraq for going on 10 years. They're going to be coming home the end of this year. Personally, how do you feel about the fact that we're just pulling out at the end of the year?
I've got some real strong feelings on that, Ann. I'm going to refer back to someone that was a lot smarter than me. Back during the wars between the Greeks, before the Romans came around, back to the Greeks and the Spartans, there was a very smart guy, Homer. And he wrote what's generally considered to be a masterpiece. If you're anybody, you have to read the Iliad. If you go to college, you have to read that. But I don't recall which character is speaking, but there's a statement in there. And the man is an infantry commander. And he says, "Our business in the field of fight is not to question, but to fight." And here in America today, we have that same system. The decision to use military force or not use it is not made by the military. It's made by civilian authority. So a lot of people in the military don't really give any thought to the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like Kipling said, you know, ours not to reason why, ours but to do and die. It may seem sort of foreign to somebody who's never been in the military, but you don't give any thought to something that you're not going to have any say-so in. If you're told to go, you go. If you're told to fight, you fight. But you don't really say, well, now, was this a good idea? Or what could we have done differently? You do what you're told to do, and that's it.
But what about the fact of coming home, pulling out?
The decision to do that, I've got some feelings about that, which I'd rather keep to myself.
Okay.
But everybody wants to come home.
Absolutely.
I don't. If somebody says, oh, no, I wanted to stay, wherever, whether that was World War One or whatever, I don't know anybody that doesn't want to come home.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I think one of the things that is very interesting, though, is, Marion, is that in Congress, in the Senate, in all the offices, we don't have people with military background today like we did 20 years ago.
That's correct. Back in World War II, over 50% of Congress, of the members of Congress, had served in the military. And I've recently heard it, 8% is the last figure I heard. I'm not sure that's correct.
Right.
But if you just look at just your own South Carolina representation, you can see that you don't have many people in Congress who have military experience.
Do you think that made a difference? Do you think it was a good idea that people that were in, that were our leaders had some military training?
I don't think it's absolutely necessary. You need a lot of input from people who have had the experience. I don't know of any football coach who's never played football. I don't know of any swimming coach who doesn't know how to swim.
Sure. So I think that does make a difference. Well, we are here with Marion Sturkey. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some more issues, things going on. Veterans Day is Friday, and we wanted to talk more about some of the things that have gone on and some of the things that are going on. And we may even get into some of the monuments that are right here in our area that are tributes to our fallen. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. If you'd like to give us a call us, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
You can't be wrong, rocking and rolling all week long.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy day.
You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here with Marion Sturkey here today. He is retired from the military, retired Marine Corps. He's written several books, and he, I got to say, you got to enjoy history. And, you know, part of your passion is for people to know about what Veterans Day is about, because I think you're right. A lot of people just go, oh, Veterans Day, it's about, must be something to do with veterans. One of the things that impresses me about Veterans Day today is how many businesses and places are coming on board with doing something special for our veterans. It certainly is a different time than when you came home from Vietnam.
And I think you're right. The military is more visible today because the military has decided they want to be visible in public. They want to get involved in civil affairs. They want to get involved in community affairs, and they have become more visible. They are the public, and schools and businesses are more receptive to military people coming on their premises in uniform now than they were 45 years ago.
Sure, and of course we see so many great homecoming, shall we say, when somebody comes home from the military. I think there was one that was on a football field over the weekend that they were playing, where the guy came in and they had his fiance and two children standing on the football field, and he came right onto the field and totally surprised them. I mean, you see things like this now where you didn't see those type of things.
You're correct. There's a lot of that on TV. The motive may not be quite as pure as we would like it to be. It's done because ratings drive everything, and people
sure.
like to see that type of thing. But whatever the reason, it's being done a lot more than it was in the past.
Absolutely, and I think that is I think that's important. But as we're looking at Veterans Day coming up, what can you tell us about it's the 11th hour of the 11th day. What made that important for it to be called Armistice Day, I guess, originally, and now, of course, it's Veterans Day?
It was Armistice Day originally, and what we now call World War I, at the time was called, we didn't know there was going to be another one, so it was called the World War, or the Great War, or the War to End All War. And seven million combatants died in that conflict, which was primarily centered around Europe. It was the first time that poison gas had been used in warfare. It was the first time that aircraft had been used in warfare, and it was truly a world war with every country being involved in one way or another. So on 11 November 1918, when the armistice was signed, the whole world breathed a sigh of relief. It was the end of the war. And we would never have another one, or at least that was the thinking at the time. And it was called Armistice Day. In Canada, they called it Remembrance Day. But at the time, it was not a holiday, but people closed down businesses. It was a day for picnics and barbecue in celebration of the end of the Great War. At least that's the way it started.
Sure. But then it changed over time.
It did. In 1926, Congress passed a resolution. It wasn't a law, but it was a resolution at that time, and everyone was requested to stop business on that day and fly the American flag. In 1938, it became a federal holiday, but at the time, it was Armistice Day, and it was a day to celebrate the end of the Great War. But, of course, in the next decade, we had World War II, and in the decade after that, the war in Korea. So after that, Congress passed a law, and they established a national holiday, Veterans Day. Of course, they couldn't call it Armistice Day anymore.
Well, you know what's interesting is that you were in 1938, Armistice Day, to honor veterans of the Great War, a day dedicated to the cause of world peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And here we are today, still fighting wars.
Well, I'm not a great biblical scholar, but you know what the Bible says, that there will always be wars and rumors of wars.
Well, I guess you're right. So as we move forward from that, we had the Korean War, and then what happened with President Eisenhower decided that this should be a whole big celebration every year, a remembrance.
That's correct, and it became Veterans Day, and technically it's a day to honor those both living and dead who have served in the armed forces during times of war. The public generally does not make that distinction, but technically it's a day to honor those both living and dead who served in time of war.
Yeah, I think the words are really, the proclamation stated, let us solemnly remember the sacrifices of all those who fought so valiantly on the seas, in the air, and on foreign shores to preserve our heritage of freedom, and let us reconcentrate ourselves to the task of promoting and enduring peace so that their efforts shall not have been in vain. I think that is great sentiment.
I think so, too.
I only wish that we could stop it, don't you?
If you have a magic wand, a lot of people would be very receptive to that. But
yeah.
I don't think there's going to be one. There's some very good people in this world, but there's some very evil people in this world also. And there are some who are always going to try to take advantage of others who are considered to be weaker, or others who have what they do not have.
You know, well, what do you think, one of the big things about the United States, though, as we look at other places that are involved in wars and everything is, well, we go to war to defend others that cannot defend themselves.
We do. We do. And we were talking before we went on the air, and I mentioned that retired Army General Colin Powell made a very famous statement a few years ago about the fact that the American military in the 20th century has gone overseas on many, many occasions not to get us anything here, not to create an empire, mm-hmm. not to gain wealth, but to ensure the rights and freedom of others. And in his statement, he also said that all we ask in return was just enough land to bury those who died in the process.
Absolutely. And I why is it our country does that? Why is it? Why do we feel like we are the defenders?
Maybe I'm a little, maybe I have rose-colored glasses on, but I think basically this country is made up of good people. Do we have bad folks? Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Do we have people who don't buy into the American way of life? Yes, we do. But basically, I think we have good people. I think we have people who are concerned about the welfare of others, and not just our neighbors here in this country, but our neighbors overseas. And they believe that so strongly that they are willing to go put their lives on the line and sometimes lose them to ensure that other people have the rights and liberties that we have here. You know, I've never seen this written anywhere, but if you really stop and think about it, this country is not about perks. It's not about privileges. It's not about entitlements. It's not about rights. This country is about service, not necessarily in the armed forces, but service and sacrifice. Again, not necessarily in the armed forces. The liberties we have are not free. They're not just handed to you on a platter. There are some great responsibilities entailed, and I think we've got some good people who are willing to step up and take on those responsibilities. I believe in the goodness of mankind. I hope that belief is not totally misplaced.
I hope you're right, too, Marion Sturkey. We are here, as I said, with Marion Sturkey. We are going to hear what's left of South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. Don't you go away. We'll be right back. And, hey, if you've got a question for Marion, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here. We are talking to Marion Sturkey today, having a good time. He just got back from Norfolk, where he was the guest speaker up there for the Marine Corps Ball up there. 236 years of the Marines. And what a very important part of our history and of protecting America. So we're going to talk some more just in just a second. Did want to tell you, hey, if you have gold to sell, this is your golden opportunity. Just checked the price of gold, just made it over $1,800 again. Listen, don't wait. I'm telling you. Who knows what tomorrow will bring? Right now, over $1,800, though. Come see us today. Take advantage of the price. This has not been there for about a month or so. So this is your time to sell, and sell here at Sharp Facets Gallery right here on the 72 bypass. And we're doing a very big special here at Sharp Facets Gallery for any veteran who is a veteran or active duty military on Friday. Veterans Day, we are going to be giving an extra 11% off all purchases. How about that, Marion? Sounds pretty good.
Sounds good to me. I'm not much into jewelry, but I see a couple of ladies out there looking. I know women and jewelry go together.
Absolutely.
You know, diamonds are a girl's best friend, I understand.
Yes, they are, because they're always there. Those rocks won't fade. To quote a quote from Marilyn Monroe there. All right. Well, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery, 11% off. It's just a little token of our thank you to all our veterans for doing their job out there protecting us. And you know what amazes me is so many guys look at it, and gals too, as just doing my job. I think they're doing more than their job, Marion, because they don't have to sign up for that job today.
No, they don't have to sign up. But being realistic, the financial compensation is greater today. But it's not a job. It has to be a calling, and it takes a very special type of person. But we've got people who are willing to step forward and do that.
Yeah, and but that's what I mean. I mean, it's more than a job. When you go overseas and spend 6 months or a year of your life in the sands and everything, like we were just talking about with Garrett Culberson the other day, it certainly makes a difference. But we're talking about Veterans Day. We're talking with Marion Sturkey here today. And one of the things that Marion has written, he's written several books. Bonnie Sue was perhaps his most famous book. You gave Jeff a book. I read some of that. What was the name of that book?
And I don't remember which one I gave him. I probably gave him Murphy's Laws of Combat.
Right, Murphy's Laws of Combat. That is a good one. That has a lot of similarities to business that you can apply. But you're in the process of writing this book. Is this correct, about the monuments of South Carolina?
Yes, military monuments and memorials statewide.
Yes, but there are quite a few right here in Greenwood, and I think, like we were talking about, you have a tendency to drive by these things and you never really think much about them. But I thought, with Veterans Day being here this Friday, maybe it would be a good time to talk about some of these and the history of them with our listeners, so that they can go out and check out these monuments and know what they stand for and why they're there.
Well, I think so too, and I'll be glad to do that. Just a little information. Back 3,000 years ago, mm-hmm. at least that far back, military commanders originally started building great monuments to celebrate or to commemorate or mark their battlefield victories. But over the years, that has changed a little bit, and government has primarily taken on this task. But today, you don't see monuments really to commemorate great victories. You see monuments to honor those who served and also to honor those who died.
Absolutely. And we have, do you think we have a lot more monuments than what a area such as Greenwood would have? It seems to me, looking through this, they are quite plentiful.
They are, and as you said, a lot of them tend to be out of sight and out of mind, but of course a lot of them are in remote places too. There's a cemetery up near the Greenwood Airport that has a lot of people who served during the American Civil War are buried there. It's out in the woods, mm-hmm. and there's a small memorial there, but the average person would never in their lifetime go anywhere near that.
Sure. So let's talk about some of these now. Though there are which would be some of the favorites that you'd like to talk about, Marion?
And I don't know that favorites is the right word. We can talk about several. Probably the largest, physically largest, without question, is the big Confederate memorial on the courthouse grounds. One of the other noteworthy memorials. They're all noteworthy. But right in downtown Greenwood, right on the west side of Main Street, you have a big memorial that honors those and lists the names of those who died in World War I, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. It also serves as a base for a large flagpole right in downtown Greenwood.
In fact, I believe that's where the ceremony is going to be on Friday, right there at that monument in
downtown Greenwood. That's correct. So. And there have been a number of ceremonies at that location.
Sure. And you know, you think we build monuments to remember those that have gone, but also it puts us in the fact of how many wars and how many conflicts and this type of thing have really taken place. And the amount of life that we lose here is tremendous.
It is. Let me kind of diverge a little bit because my background is the Marine Corps. In February of 1945, in the closing years of that war, over in the Pacific, there was a small island named Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. And it was part of the Tokyo, they call it prefecture. This was Japanese home ground. And there were two Japanese airfields on Iwo Jima. The Japanese radar was on Iwo Jima. And the American military decided that that island need to be taken so that we could continue our bombing raids on Japan and to give us a closer jumping-off place. The Japanese had about 2.5 years to fortify the island. And Iwo Jima is a sulfuric, barren island. There's an extinct volcano on there, but nobody lived there before the Japanese military came. And they fortified the island. They had 22,000 troops there. Mm-hmm. There were no barracks. There were no buildings. There was nothing above ground. Everything was underground.
Wow.
The Japanese used mining engineers and slave labor, and they dug 14 miles of tunnels to connect hospitals, barracks, living quarters, and fighting positions. In the battle that would come, this was the only battle in World War II where the Americans suffered more casualties than the Japanese did. The old saying is the Japanese weren't on Iwo Jima, they were in Iwo Jima. But in any event, after a lot of naval shelling and aerial bombardment, the Marines, and it was a Marine Corps shell,
mm-hmm.
they invaded that island on 19 February. And on the 23rd of February, they had cut off and surrounded Mount Suribachi, which was the extinct volcano. And the raising of the American flag on the top of that mountain produced a photograph by a AP photographer named Joe Rosenthal.
Mm-hmm.
It's without question, it's considered the most famous photograph in the world.
Even more famous than the guy kissing the gal when the war was over?
Yes, in New York, yes, very, very much more famous.
Okay.
That's a great shot.
That is a great shot.
But the thing is, that island is roughly 5 miles long.
Okay.
I don't remember if it's 6,200 and something or 6,500 and something, but over 6,000 Marines died on an island 5 miles long. 19,000 were seriously injured, and all but 200 of the 22,000 Japanese died.
Wow.
So you've got well over 10,000 people dead, roughly 19,000 seriously wounded, both Japanese and American, over a little godforsaken fly-speck barren island that nobody lived on. That's the reality of warfare. It's not pretty. It's not something we're proud of, but that's reality. And in this country, Veterans Day is a time to remember those who fought there and died, and remember those who fought there and survived, as well as those who fought and died and survived from other conflicts and other places. The Marine Corps War Memorial up in our nation's capital, incidentally, is the largest bronze memorial monument in the world. And a quote stemming from that battle is on there. Uncommon valor was a common virtue. Nowhere on there does it say anything to the effect, we won a great victory, or glory to the victors, or this was easy. It doesn't say that. Warfare is as unfortunate as it is, it's reality. And a lot of people are willing to go and put their lives on the line to secure the freedoms of others that they don't even know.
That's true.
That's reality.
That is the reality, and that's one of the things that Garrett Culberson, who just came back from over there in Iraq, to say that the people over there, yes, they want their freedom. And yes, in his words, he said, yes, we should be there to help get them their freedom.
As a matter of fact, if you look at the retention rates and reenlistment rates in the American military,
mm-hmm.
by far, I mean, it's no contest, the highest reenlistment and retention rates are among the troops who are deployed. They believe in what they're doing. They see a need for it, and they're proud to step up and say, hey, regardless of the hardships and privations and danger, I'm ready to go for 4 more years.
Why do you think sometimes the American public doesn't support that act then?
Well, the American public doesn't. It's not unique just to this country.
No, I'm sure.
Countries
not.
Get tired of warfare, and especially in the modern age when you can get news in newspapers, live from the front.
Mm-hmm.
You grow tired of it because it is a brutal business. One of the most famous military commanders, he's not very much loved in this area of the country, was General William T. Sherman, the great Northern commander.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 1880s, I forget the exact date, in his old age, he was speaking to a gathering of military veterans and young men. And I can quote what he said. He said, "There's many a boy here today who looks on war as all glory. But boys, war is hell." And he added, "It's only those who have never heard the shrieks." And you don't see me reading anything.
No, you're not reading anything.
I know what he said.
Yes.
He said, "It's only those who have never heard the shrieks and groans of the dying who cry aloud for more blood, more vengeance, and more destruction." War is hell.
It is. And it is. And you're right. There's a lot of us who have never heard that and will never hear that, those cries. We are here with Marion Sturkey. We will be back after this word from our sponsors. Don't you go away.
Happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes. My cycle hums.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Happy days, Tuesday.
You're listening to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. And now coming to you live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here is your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. And Marion was just sharing something with me, and I think it's probably so true, because those of us that have never been in a war situation or never been in any type of combat other than maybe, I don't like you, combat, we don't understand what it is like. And you were just sharing the fact that so many people will talk about the time that they have in the military, but they don't talk about that combat moment.
And that's correct. And I think if you think about it, you'll find out that's true. Now, there are many people who serve in the military in what's commonly called rear echelon roles and serve with distinction. And they're very necessary. They may be in the logistics supply train. They may be in some administrative jobs. They may be a mechanic. They may be a cook. They may guard prisoners. They may deal with civil affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And those are necessary functions in a military organization. And if someone is talking about guarding prisoners, for example, we can all basically understand that. Somebody's talking about working on trucks in some supply depot. We can all understand that. But people who've actually been in what the military calls close combat don't talk about it. They don't, and they can't. It's not possible to explain all the emotions involved. You just can't. You can't do it.
I think a lot of us don't understand that. Being a woman, we always think that everybody wants to talk about these things. I mean, you know, that's just the way women are bent. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about it, right? And that doesn't work.
It doesn't work because if you're talking to someone who has not shared that experience, they cannot appreciate what you're talking about. It's absolutely foreign. And there are emotions like fear, obviously, that's in there, loyalty, mission, survival, looking out for your fellow man. They'll be looking out for you. The intensity and depth of those emotions are totally foreign to somebody who hasn't shared the experience. So people who've had the experience just don't talk about it because they really can't.
I know I talked to several people, military people, who had been in the military when the wall was here. And one of the things that one of the guys said to me that was most difficult for him was to have a friend who died and to have to get up the next morning and go out and protect somebody else, a buddy, I mean, protect each other to be out there. And he said for years it just really bothered him because you just got up and you just did. And that is something that I think most human beings that have never had that don't understand that. And that, of course, was during Vietnam that he was talking about. And that's a very hard thing, and something that, and I guess that's why we have so many that come back and have a lot of emotional issues to deal with when they come back.
There was an old expression in my era, if you were serving in Vietnam, there was an expression, well, I'm going to go back to the world. And it's like going back to a totally different planet. And as a matter of fact, when you're in a combat situation, what's going on in the United States or Germany or South Africa, it's not that you don't care. The concern just doesn't exist. It doesn't matter. It's literally like it was on another planet.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at survival, right? That's the one and only mission that you have.
You're looking at survival, but you're looking at a number of other factors also.
Sure.
But they have nothing to do with what's going on back in the United States.
What do you think about the communication that military people have with family and everything? Do you think that makes it more difficult for them, or do you think that's a good thing? I mean, we have Skype, we have email, we have all these ways to communicate today.
I think it's a good thing. And I can't tell you what it means because I did not have that personally. I can tell you, I mentioned early on, my son-in-law, who's a good guy, he is in, let's just say, the Middle East and leave it like that, at that right now. But he has a Skype capability where he can, on the computer, he can sit in front of the computer, and my daughter back here in the United States and my granddaughter can see his face, and they can in real time. And he can talk to them, and they can talk to him. And he can see them also. Of course, naturally, that type of technology hadn't even been thought of in my era. But he also has cell phone capability. Excuse me, not cell phone. Email capability.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have that either. So I'm not really... I don't have the ability to tell you whether that's good or bad because I haven't been in that situation.
But, I just sometimes wonder if it is, shall we say, maybe a heart or a distraction. You want to be able to, you know, particularly if you're a guy, you want to be helping your wife back home deal with this, deal with that. And, of course, you can't because you're there doing that.
Yeah. Well, if you're in an actual combat situation,
you don't have that
talking contact to somebody 8,000 miles away. I mean, you don't even think about it. You have to be in a support activity, an administrative activity. And in case of my son-in-law, he supervises three groups that put bombs and missiles on F-16. So he's back at a base where he can do that type of thing.
But if you're
an infantryman. And it hasn't changed since the days of the Roman legions. If you're an infantryman out there where the rubber meets the road, talking to somebody back home, you don't even think about it.
Okay.
It's just not something you contemplate. You don't sit around saying, I wish I could talk to somebody, or I wish I could write a letter. You've got other concerns, and it's literally like back home is in another world. You don't even think about it.
You know, Marion Sturkey, it is always nice to have you come and talk to us. Veterans Day is Friday, and we're going to come up here, and I'm going to have to give a station ID, and then we're going to finish up here. You are listening to WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. I am here today with Marion Sturkey. You know, Marion, I know you're a very passionate man, and is there something you would like to say out there to our veterans that are sitting here listening today?
And I don't have the magic words, but I think I speak for many when I say I didn't do anything exceptional. I didn't do anything glorious. I did what my country asked me to do. And when I say our country, that's what society needs and what society asks us to do. And I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of the people I was with. And I felt that in our time we did what needed to be done, but, you know, when you take off the uniform, the obligation to do what you can do for society doesn't stop.
That's true.
The world is still out there, and in many, many different ways. I think, what's the biblical phrase? To each according to his talents, do what you can do.
Marion Sturkey, thanks so much for being here with us on Coming Up with Veterans Day. It's been a real honor to interview you again. And again, I want to thank you for your service to our country and your continued service.
Well, thank you for having me.
All righty. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Bye-bye, everybody.